Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lyrics Unwrapped, the podcast which analytically breaks down the best rap lyrics of all time, explaining the hidden meaning and genius of each bar. I'm your host, Chandler So, and on the second episode of Lyrics Unwrapped, I would just like to take a time, a moment, a second to shout out all of my very supportive friends and family, and most importantly, the fans. That's right. I said the fans. There are thousands of you guys out there. I couldn't believe it. I put out one episode and boom, I'm across all of the internet, all of the major podcasting awards, all the major podcasting websites. We did it. We're number one already. Oh my God. I can't believe we made it out there. You know how I know this? Want me to tell you how I know this? I haven't been Googling myself. No, I'm not that conceited. Six out of six of my friends who I sent my podcast to all said it's okay. So that means I know that this podcast is incredible. It's a banger. It's an absolute top one out of a trillion podcasts, right? This is a trillion podcasts in the universe. This one is number one. If six out of six of my friends say it's okay, I know it's good. Looking at you, Abba, you said you listened to it for more than 3 minutes. Wow. That's like the ultimate compliment. It's as if Gwen Stefani said it. Oh my God, coming from you. 3 minutes, my podcast out of 43 minutes. Dude, I appreciate it. Michael, you said, wow, this is really surprising for you, Chandler. Congrats. You actually did something. Yes, I did something. You're right. I know it's surprising, right? Thank you so much for that. And Pavle, you said, oh my God, my ears weren't bleeding by the second minute. That's impressive for you, Chandler. Yes, thank you. I'm so honored by all of your compliments from all my friends. Thank you again for all the feedback you've given me. Thank you again for all of the encouragement you've given me in creating this podcast. I feel so honored. So after all the feedback, as I just mentioned, a ton of it, right? Thousands of fans that I have. Yes, yes. I have decided to kind of edit the way I'm doing this podcast. I want to make this episode a little bit shorter. We're only going to analyze three songs instead of five like the last time, based off of feedback from, again, a lot of fans, a lot of friends, and my mom. So here we go. First song, right off the top, Old Man Saxon. Old Man Saxon. He's a Los Angeles rapper. I'm a Los Angeles Chandler, so we already have that in common. I actually saw Old Man Saxon perform at the USC Festival of Books this year, probably around 6 months ago, maybe a little bit less, maybe 4 months ago. It was super cool. He performed this song, and I was probably the only one in the audience singing along. I know this because I was one singing along, and two, when he saw me singing along, he looked at me and was really excited. So I'm guessing at the Festival of Books, not too many rap heads there. Go figure. Anyways, the song is called The Perils. It's probably his most famous song. It's off of the album, take a guess, The Perils. And yeah, so I guess, all right. Let's just read the whole thing through and then I'll explain why this piece of this song is so cool. All right, so check this out. Constipation and constant hating got me looking up at the constellations. Steady corroborating fallacies about where I'm staying, you know, somewhere in Silver Lake, but really in the back on the passenger side, toasting and laughing like, look where I'm at tonight. So, I don't know. You might have not felt that. You might have not felt that. Well, let me tell you why I feel that. Well, let me tell you why that means so much to me. Well, let me tell you why I think that's so incredible, creative, innovative, and genius. Okay, I'm going to start at the end. I know I typically don't do this. I'm going to start at the end. So, on the passenger side, toasting and laughing like, look where I'm at tonight. On the passenger side. Do you know where he's at? You know where he's at? He's in his car. He's sleeping in his car. He's toasting and laughing while sleeping on the passenger side of his car. He is the homeless rapper. My boy, Old Man Saxon, was homeless when he was rapping and making these raps. And that's why I think this is so incredible. All of these other mainstream and very vanilla rappers are like, yo, I got mad cars, mad bitches, got a mansion for my moms. Everybody know that my dick is the bomb. Like, all this bullshit that they put in out, it's not actually about life, man. All man Saxon out here like, man, look at this, dude. I'm sleeping in my car, man. I'm homeless. Like, he's talking about that real, you know? He's not out here, yo, I'm thugging on the streets, man. I'm a real OG. I keep it on you as I move a kilo a day, man. You know it's on me. Like, fuck that shit, dude. That's not real, man. Because, I mean, that is real for some people, but it's not real for all of them. It's not real for all of them. Even Pusha T, man. Pusha T, I think I saw an analysis on his raps. It's like 70% of his rap lyrics are about cocaine or some crazy high number. Yeah, dude, you sold cocaine. We get it. Is that 70% of your life? Is 70% of your life dedicated to cocaine? That means you'd not even sleep like fucking 2 hours a night if 70% of your life is dedicated to cocaine. Given all the other shit humans have to do, like shit, sleep, eat, all that shit. It's crazy. Make music? Dude, he's keeping it real out here, talking about his homelessness. So, check this out. He mentions it earlier on in the song that he is homeless. He doesn't actually straight up say it. You have to kind of read between the lines. You have to see what he's saying. You know, he's like, where is he staying? He's on the passenger side, toasting and laughing like. He doesn't say he's in the passenger side of a car. You have to imply that it's on a car. Or it's in a car. You have to imply that that's what he means by where he's staying. He's sleeping. That's where his home is a car. You have to imply all these things. So he's not very like, oh man, pity me, dude. I'm sleeping in my car. Life is so hard. Oh, no, he's out here saying like, I'm on the passenger side, toasted and laughing like, look where we at tonight. Dude, homeboy really is super cool about this. He's very straightforward, but also very between the lines on it. I love it. I absolutely love it. So let's go back through the whole verse I just read. Constipated and constant hating got me looking up at the constellations. Okay. This is a really fun line. This is a very fun line. Let's dissect it a little bit. Why don't we, let's go look at it. All right. So look, check it out. The hate and people who refuse to give a shit about him. The hate he's received, constant hating, right? And the people who refuse to give a shit, constipation and constant hating. People refusing to give a shit about him and people constantly hating him got me looking up at the constellations, keeping him up at night. He's staying up at night just staring at the stars. He can't fall asleep because of all the people who are hating on him and all the people who are refusing to give a shit about him. But wait, there's more. Shamwell introduced you. I'm kidding. So because of his homelessness life, he was unable to use the restroom when he needed to. Okay, he mentions this earlier on in his song about being denied the access to use the restroom because he was homeless. And the line kind of goes something like, most of these fools ain't loyal cats. They smoke until the foil's black. He's saying that managers and restauranteurs and people who worked at restaurants were like, no, you can't use our restroom. All you homeless people do in our restroom is smoke heroin and crack out of foil. We don't want that. You're not allowed to use a restroom. So he wasn't allowed to use the restroom at many places. Therefore, he had to hold in his shit all the time. And by holding in his shit all the time, it made him constipated. And that's kind of what he's talking about. Like, his constipation was keeping him up at night. The pain of his constipation was keeping him up at night. So it's a two-part thing, right? So his haters and the lack of people giving a shit about him were keeping him up at night, but also his homelessness lifestyle. Not lifestyle as in, like, it was a choice, but, like, the results and the implications of being homeless were also keeping him up at night because of the pain. So let's keep going on. Steady corroborating fallacies about where I'm staying. I would just like to take a point to shout out the word corroborating. He used the word corroborating in a song. I think that's very cool. The first time I even heard that word corroborating, I was reading some old novel from like the 1800s. Who was it? Hold on. Jane Austen. Jane Austen. Yeah, I know this. I have this little decoration with Jane Austen's name on it, on hanging up in my living room. I'm not bullshitting you. Anyone who disagrees, I'll happily send you a picture of it. So that's why I like went to go look at it right now. I forgot her name, but yeah, I'm a big Jane Austen fan, and reading a Jane Austen novel is ridiculous. You need to keep a dictionary by your sides at all time. I remember like one time reading a paragraph and having to Google 5 different words because I had no clue what they meant. And corroborating was one of those words. And I don't know, it just stuck with me. I remember exactly the first time I read the... Oh, shit. No, it wasn't Jane Austen. It was Wuthering Heights. Wuthering Heights was the book I was reading, and I came across the word corroborating and had to look it up. And yes, okay. So very big shout out to Old Man Saxon for using the word corroborating. I don't know. Maybe you guys have heard this word 60,000 times in the last like minute of your life. And you're like, oh, dude, come on. I know that word like I know the word because, bro. That's such a common word. My vocabulary big. My brain big, bitch. Like, I don't give a fuck, dude. It's cool for me to hear like very unique words like that. Steady corroborating fallacies about where I'm staying. Then there's this kind of aside, like, you know, somewhere in Silver Lake. Again, he's kind of talking about, like, people whispering, like, oh, Old Man Saxon, where does he stay? Like, isn't he the homeless rapper? Isn't he, like, homeless somewhere in Silver Lake? You know, it's just kind of playing off that motif a little bit. It's fun. But really, in the back, on the passenger side, toasting and laughing like LaCroix Matt tonight, this is so awesome because he's describing his experience, and again, not the self-loathing, self-pitying, angry, hating fashion, but he almost makes it celebratory. He's like, oh, toasting and laughing, like his homelessness experience was an experience for him that he celebrated. I just think it's so cool that he described it like that. I think you guys get the point. I want to stop hitting you over the head with this very obvious theme. Very awesome. Okay. That's that. Again, the rapper, Old Man Saxon, the song, The Perils. Check it out in the show notes on my website. I'll have a link to him. I'll link to some of his other songs that I really like. Check it out. And if you're listening to this Old Man Saxon, again, I said I live in Los Angeles. I've already seen you. We should get together if you want to talk about whether or not I interpreted your song correctly. Come on through. Get on my podcast. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be very thankful you came on the podcast. Anyways, the next rapper, J Electronica. J Electronica is one of the most famous rappers in all of underground hip-hop culture. He had a very strong presence on the scene when he first entered it with incredible songs and music and a ton of hype behind him. He got signed to Jay-Z's album, Roc Nation. Rockefeller Records. I don't know, something like that. Some rock-ish. I don't know. He got signed onto a Jay-Z's label, which is a big deal. Very, 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 very big deal. As you know, Jay-Z, big boy. Big label, big brand, big boy. And from there, J Electronica, now that he has the backing of a major label, what does he proceed to do? Drop out of the rap game. He's like, I'm done with this shit. Later, bitches. I'm going to tour Africa? I don't know. He dropped off the face of Earth. It's been almost a decade since he dropped his last album. And ever since then, we've just been all dying to hear his next album that he's been supposedly in the works on for a decade now. Ever since his last album, he's like, all right, I'm on the next one, baby. It's going to be banging. It's going to be awesome. And he just never put it out. He actually dropped a track list for this album probably around 3 years ago or so. And the track list included songs on it that have been out and leaked for 7 to 8 years now. It's insane. I don't know what's up with him. No one does. Everyone thinks he's never going to put out another album because the hype behind it is just too high that there is no way he could ever satisfy such a hype. Anyways, the song is Exhibit A. His biggest song, I would probably say, is a song called Exhibit C. However, I actually think this one is better than Exhibit C. This is Exhibit A. It's off of the album Victory, and it goes like this. Who gon' bring the game back? Who gon' spit that Ramo on the train tracks? I'm taking a deep breath right now because I have to give you a paragraph, an essay, a dissertation's amount of explanation to give you all of the insight into what those two very seemingly simple lines actually are about. Are you guys ready to embark on this journey with me? No? Fuck you, get off my podcast, because I am, baby. This shit's dope. Who's going to bring the game back? Who going to spit that rainbow one that train tracks? Who's going to make rap good and competitive again? Who's going to bring that game back? The game being the rap game. You guys get this. This is really simple. The interesting part is that all of the reference in these two lines, it is a reference to the movie Beach Street. So you got the obvious first meaning of that line. Who's going to bring the game back? Who's going to make it competitive? Who's going to spit that rainbow on the train tracks? Who's going to spit that rainbow reel on the train tracks, on the track? Who's going to spit that reel on the track? Who's going to spit that reel on that rap song, on the rap track? Track means song. I think you guys know this. I have to explain for my mom, who doesn't really listen to rap music, and she's listening to my podcast. She's actually not. I just feel like explaining a lot of things because I like listening to myself talk. I'm totally lying. I hate the sound of my voice. If you're listening right now, I don't know how you put up with it, but congratulations. You deserve a medal. I'll pay you money for listening to my podcast because I feel the need to be validated. Regardless, the not obvious part of this verse is, again, the reference to the movie Beat Street. Spit is actually the name of the character in the movie Beat Street, and he was named Spit as kind of a nickname because, all right, well, first off, Beat Street, I've actually never seen the movie. I had to look up this reference. I think it's a movie about street graffiti, and Spit would actually mark up other people's graffiti. He would graffiti over other people's graffiti, and it was said like he was spitting on other people's work, right? So he was called Spit. And the line, it says, who gonna spit? Jay's asking, who's gonna spit? Who's gonna be the one to spit on other people's stuff? Who's gonna be the one to call out all of the bad rappers? And then also, let's check this out. Ramo is the name of another character in the movie. And in the movie, Ramo fights Spit on train tracks. So who's going to spit that Ramo on the train tracks? Who's going to be the one to insult other rappers, call them out for their shitty work and put better work on top of them, and then fight them over it? That's what that's about. I might have over-explained that simple kind of concept. It's very clever because it works both ways. And that's what I really like about rap. I like rap that not only references other things, but also references it in a way as to have multiple meanings and multiple meanings that make sense without too much of a stretch. Again, who's going to spit that Ramo on the train tracks? Ramo's kind of a weird... Ramo to real is kind of a bit of a stretch. I'll grant that. It's not like the most seamless reference, but who's gonna spit? That's really clean. Using the word spit on the train tracks, that's actually very clean. That's a very seamless reference right there. Anyways, the song keeps going. Who's gonna bring the game back? Who's gonna spit that rainbow on the train tracks? That gold rope, that five finger ring wrap, running with my same pack. Again, he's talking about, not again, because I didn't really say it, but you can kind of infer it from the lyrics. Who's going to bring the game back? He's talking to a return to kind of the origin of maybe not the origin of rap, but maybe more like return to when rap was very competitive. And he's saying that this time and era was when rappers wore that big, very thick chains, the thick gold chains, right? That gold rope, fucking referring to a chain as a rope, means it's thick, right? Five finger rings, that five finger ring wrap. So when rappers used to wear five finger rings, that's when he's saying the game used to be competitive. And he's saying he's running with them, right? that gold rope, that five-finger ring wrap, running with my same pack. He's saying he's running with that pack. He's running with the competitive OG rappers who really had the game on lock, who really kept the game competitive, and it was good back then. So he's saying he's running with them. The next line, you can find the Christ where the lepers and the lame's at. Okay. I'm not quite sure, but he's probably talking about himself here as Christ. He says the before Christ. You can find the Christ where the lepers and the lame's at. So the fact that he puts the word the before it make it sound very pointed, as if Christ currently exists and this is where he is at. So since Jay has only so far talked shit about other rappers in the game, it's clear he isn't talking about other rappers, because he kind of blanket statement called all other rappers shit. Therefore, the only other person that could be a contender for the title of Christ is probably himself. And since Christ definitely exists at this time, according to him, with the clarifier the, it's probably talking about himself. You could find the Christ where the lepers and the lame's at. Oh, I should probably talk about what this is. This is a biblical reference. Jesus Christ hung out with lepers and lames and people of all sorts, like prostitutes, stuff like that. I'm not very religious and I'm not Christian, so yeah, I'm going to hell if that's what you believe, but whatever. Anyways, that's just a biblical reference. Like, that's actually what occurs. That's what's said in the Bible. You can find the Christ where the lepers and the lame's at. Life is like a dice game. One roll could land you in jail or cutting cake, blowing kisses in the rice rain. This is a reference to a Nas song. Nas, the rapper out of New York, one of the OGs up there with Biggie Smalls and Tupac. Maybe not as big as both of them because he's actually alive. I'm guessing if he were to have been killed in a similar fashion and a similar time frame as both of them, he would probably be a well-known name. Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like almost living has continuing to live has probably hurt his fame. It's really interesting now that I think about it. But anyways, it's a reference to a Nas song. Life is like a dice game. So that's literally the lyric from the song. Life is like a dice game. One roll could land you in jail or cutting cake, blowing kisses in the rice rain. The actual song from Nas is Life is like a dice game. Verbatim reference. And that song, Nas says he won't ever rat on someone and have them sent to prison. He will never rat on them. He'll never have them sent to prison. Those are the very first lines of the song. But Jay Electronica says that it's not about the anti-snitch code. It's not about the thug code, about not snitching, right? But it's rather a random chance whether life sends you to jail or instead it gives you a good life where you can end up happily married. That's what he means by cutting cake, blowing kisses in the rice rain. Again, like cutting cake, you have that wedding cake. Blowing kisses in the rice rain. Oh, this is a really cool metaphor. We've seen it, right? We've seen the movies. We've seen the pictures. We've maybe even been to weddings where the couples leave the church and on both sides of the stairs coming down from the church are all their friends and family waving at them, super happy, smiling at them, and throwing rice over them. They're throwing rice over them. And the happily married couple is running down, huge smiles, cheek to cheek, ear to ear smiles, and they're blowing kisses to all their friends and family as they're running through the rice rain and on into the convertible, whatever car. It's like a convertible fucking, what are they called? Not sedans. Coupe. Sedan or not convertible coupe, and then off into the sunset with the on the back of their car, on the windshield, the back windshield, it says like just married, rain and soap, and they have the tin cans on strings tied to the back of their car. Yes, we've all seen this scene from movies and maybe even in person. I haven't, but I'm pretty young. I haven't been to many weddings, and especially not like textbook fairy weddings like that. I just really like this metaphor. I haven't heard of anyone referring to getting married and having a beautiful life as rice rain. It's clever. It's fun. Just adds that little extra to the bar, you know? He could just say, like, life is like a dice game. One roll could end you in jail or out there getting married in the, like, I don't know, word that rhymes with game. He could have just said it very straightforward, but instead he chooses to use these metaphors like blowing kisses in the rice rain. I don't know. It's really cool. It's really fun. I do know. Why the fuck do I keep saying I don't know? This is my podcast. I do know. That's a really fun metaphor. It adds that extra that I love. Okay. Nice whip, nice chain, a closet of skulls. The stench is like the slave blood at Providence Hall. Yes, 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 yes. You can just feel that bar reeking with symbolism. Let me give it to you again. Nice whip, nice chain, a closet of skulls. The stench is like the slave blood at Providence Hall. This line is fucking incredible. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He's saying that the current culture worships material goods like cars and jewelry, and that the same culture, this rap culture, also glorifies acquiring such material goods by harmful methods such as killing each other. He then goes on to say that this culture has just made African Americans slaves to this mindset, and it stinks as much as actual slavery. Oh my God. God, what? That's so crazy. The way he conveys such deep meaning in a very, not simple, but very straightforward yet between the lines and melodic flowing bar. Nice whip, nice chain, a closet of skulls. The stench is like the slave blood of Providence Hall. It sounds so good. The consonants all flow together. And this is the message he's conveying. Providence Hall, right? The stench is like the slave blood at Providence Hall. Providence Hall is an old slave auction house in Virginia. That's what it's referring to. So that's how you know it's like... Again, he says the slave blood, but that's how you know it's really about slaves. It's that real slave talk, and it's crazy. So we're already at 30 minutes. I only talked about two songs. Holy shit. I'll make this next one super short, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I should just hold off. No, I'll do this one now. Okay. The next song is by Black Star. It's titled Thieves in the Night. The album is Black Star. Black Star is a duo project by Talib Kweli and Mos Def. This first verse comes from Talib Kweli. I'm only taking a section of this verse in this song. I actually have picked out almost the entire second verse by Mos Def to analyze, and that'll be another time because that's like a 32 bar and it's incredible the whole way through. And this first verse that I'm going to analyze for you right now by Talib Kweli is also incredible, but I decided to just do this shorter segment. That's 8 bar, I think, or so. And it goes like this. Give me the fortune, keep the fame, said my man Lewis. I agree, know what he mean, because we live the truest lie. Wow. You can tell that means something, right? And it's actually hard to almost understand what it means. Give me the fortune, keep the fame. He just wants the money. He doesn't want to be famous. I agree is what Talib Kweli says to this sentiment. Know what he mean, because we live the truest lie. He's saying that he knows what he means because he actually lives the opposite. I think that's what he means. I think that's what we live the truest lie. I think the truest lie in this is referring to the fact that fame over fortune is better. I think a lot of rappers pursue this. in their rap lyrics, in their ostentatious behavior. They prefer fame over fortune, and that's kind of the aesthetic that culture predominantly gravitates to, is fame over fortune. However, Talib Kweli is saying, yeah, I'm living that life, I'm seeing that life, and that's the truest life. Fuck that shit, give me the fortune, I don't want this fame. It goes on. I agree, know what he mean, because we live the truest lie. I ask him why we follow the law of the bluest eye. Holy shit, the law of the bluest eye is a book all about how African-American culture is dominated by white culture, and how they're bending and twisting and distorting and torturing themselves to try to be like white people, and that's their reference to judge themselves on. He asks why we follow the law of the white people of the bluest eye. And he looked at me, he thought about it, was like, I'm clueless. Why? The question was rhetorical. The answer is horrible. Our morals are out of place and got our lives full of sorrow. The question was rhetorical. The answer is horrible. So why do we follow the law of the bluest eye? The question is rhetorical. We know the answer. We know the answer of why African American culture is constantly judging themselves by white people's standards. And the answer that we all know is quite horrible indeed. It's quite a tragedy. It's very sad. Our morals are out of place and got our lives full of sorrow. Saying that their morals are fucked up and it's actually impacting their lives and making their lives tragic and sad. And here we go. The last two bars of this beautiful, beautiful segment, which I've cut out for you guys. Let's go into it. It's a very, very great, great two bars. And so tomorrow, coming later than usual, waiting on someone to pity us while we find beauty in the hideous. Yeah. And so tomorrow, coming later than usual, waiting on someone to pity us, while we find beauty in the hideous. Tomorrow, coming later than usual. So they're saying that waiting on someone to pity us, they're waiting, right? They're waiting. And oh man, tomorrow is taking a long time to come around, man. We're waiting, right? You're waiting for work to end. That clock all of a sudden slows down, right? Time slows down. When you're waiting, time slows down. It's coming later than usual. You're waiting on the bus. That bus is late. It's coming late. It's slowing down. You're waiting. You're impatient. But wait, there's a second meaning here. And so tomorrow coming later than usual. Instead of then, think about it as usual. And so tomorrow coming later, as usual. They're putting what needs to be done today till tomorrow, as usual. They keep having these goals. They keep having these things they have to do. And they're like, all right, tomorrow, it's going to be tomorrow, as usual. We're just going to push it off till tomorrow. And what are they waiting to push off till tomorrow? Waiting on someone to pity us while we find the beauty and the hideous. Again, returning to this idea of bending themselves to judge themselves by white people culture. They're waiting for someone to pity them, that they have to be in this reality. And this is kind of a qualm he has. He's like, we should stop this. We should stop pitying ourselves and take action. We're trying to find beauty in the hideous as if we're hideous. He's calling themselves hideous, right? He's saying, oh man, we don't have blue eyes, we don't have gold hair, we don't have fair white skin, we're hideous. So we have to try to bend our morals into thinking that we're beautiful, and we have to try to over-glorify African-American and black culture to be beautiful because we don't match up to the bluest eye, law of the bluest eye, so therefore we're hideous. We have to play these games to be beautiful. Like, we keep waiting on people to pity us for having to play this game, and we have to keep playing this game. And he's saying he's sick of that. He's sick of having to play this game. He's sick of having to wait for people. He wants this action. He wants his culture to be like, nah, we're done with this shit. Nah, we're beautiful. fuck judging us by what white people think. Fuck judging us by the standards that white people set for themselves. We can be beautiful in our own way. We could be beautiful just by being ourselves. We don't have to play these games. We don't have someone to like come down to our standards and give us confirmation that we're beautiful. We can decide it for ourselves. That's what he's saying here. Thieves in the Night by Black Star. This verse by Talib Kweli. I can't wait to get into the next verse, which is Mos Def and Talib Kweli kind of rapping it in tandem. It's an incredible, incredible verse. I know I've been hyping it up so much, you're probably just going to go out and listen to the song and read it for yourselves. Go for it. I highly encourage it. Black Stars, they're an incredible duo. Talib Kweli and Mos Def, even by themselves, have incredible songs. Again, all the information will be on my website, in the show notes, in the about section of wherever you're listening to this. Please, please, please try to I don't know, make my mom not feel as if she raised a failure. Give me some love so I could tell my mom, hey mom, like I have two fans out there. They think what I'm doing is really cool. And they'll be like, wow, fans, you have fans, huh? Huh? How much do you have to pay them, huh? Do they run on an electricity bill because they're just blowing hot air at you? I'll be like, bruh, you so savage, girl. No, I'm kidding. That's not how me and my mom's reactions or relationship are like. I'm just out here playing it up for you guys. Any feedback, would love it, love it, love it so much. You could always come to my website, chandlersow.com, and you can give me some feedback there. You can comment on my YouTube, whatever, follow me on whatever. If you like shorter ones, let me know. If you want longer ones, let me know. I am so willing to change this podcast to what you guys want to hear. I'm always going to be talking about why rap lyrics are incredible, but the small details like how many songs to include, what rapper to include. I mean, I have a list of songs and rappers I want to include already. Trust me. I have so much content prepared for you guys. It's going to be great. But if you want me to look at some, dude, always down. You want to talk about rap? Oh, would love it. Again, this is Lyrics Unwrapped, the podcast, which analytically breaks down the best rap lyrics of all time, explaining the hidden meaning and genius of each bar. I'm your host, Chandler So, and I'm wishing you guys a farewell and I catch you soon. Peace, peace.